Good morning. You're listening to The Coffee Table here on KBBI AM 890 Homer. Today we are discussing the health of our schools on the Kenai Peninsula. And in the studio today we have three principals. I feel like I'm in trouble. And also we have Superintendent, KPBSD Superintendent Sean Dusick on the phone. But first, I would like to just go around the table and have you guys introduce yourselves for me, starting with you, Carrie.
Good morning, Quentin. Thank you so much for allowing us to be here today. I am Carrie Dendrant, the principal of Homer Middle School.
And next.
Good morning, Quentin. My name is Conrad Woodhead. I'm the principal at Chapman School in Anchor Point.
Thanks, Conrad. And Tim.
Hey, thanks, Quentin. I'm Tim Whipp. I'm the regional principal for Ketchmek Silo and Rasdoma.
Perfect. And Sean, are you with us?
I'm with us. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
All right, yeah. Sean Dusick, superintendent of KPBSD.
Perfect. So, as I said, we're going to be discussing the school system and also the school district and the situation we are in with the state budget cuts looming. I believe roughly 70% of the school district's funding comes from the state. Is that right, Sean?
Yeah, that's correct. Whatever the state gives us then determines the amount that the borough can then contribute, and it is roughly a 70-30 split in that regard.
All right. And, Sean, last time we spoke, you said that you'd be engaging the public on kind of ideas to deal with the possible budget cuts that we could see from the state. How has that gone?
It's gone really, really well. I'm really pleased with what our communications department has put together. We started this process back in October with a video conference, basically, to set the stage for the budget at that point in time, and we've been working really hard with the board in that process. But more importantly, in my mind, we've engaged what we call key communicators around the district. This is business people, parents, people that want to be involved with our school district and help support it to be the best it can be. And as we've gone through, we did regional key communicator meetings, and then in February we brought all of our key communicators together in the Central Peninsula and worked on basically a full day to ensure that they were up to date and had all of the information that they needed, and at different avenues that they could go about and make their voice heard at the state and borough level. And since then, we've conducted a series of regional meetings that were just strictly focused on the budget for the community in general, and those were well attended in Seward and Homer and Soldotna. And we're at the point now where we regularly update our web page. We send out regular media and communications because both the House and the Senate are asking for input on a long-term revenue plan. They're asking for input on the current operating budget. As a matter of fact, tonight from 4:45 to 5:45, I'll be speaking, and hopefully there'll be other key communicators that'll be speaking on to the Senate Finance Committee on their operating budget.
I see. And so you're communicating with people on multiple platforms. The current situation shouldn't be a secret, really, to anyone who is invested in the schools. So I'm wondering what you've learned from the parents, stakeholders who are, as I said, invested in the school district right now. What have you learned from them?
Well, in general, I believe from my perspective and what I've heard is that they're pleased with the school district. Of course, they also would like to see us continue to improve in various areas, particularly with student engagement and offering more and more opportunities through technology, if at all possible. But overall, like I say, appears to me that people are pleased. They do believe, particularly in their own school. You know, they're there every day most of the time, and they think that our schools are doing a great job, particularly in the Homer area, and we have results that bear that out as well.
All right. So we're going to start talking about the major subject here, the budget cuts that the state legislature could be bringing down once they have an operating budget finalized. Sean, do you have any idea as to what kind of cut the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District might see once the legislature has a final budget?
Well, you know, currently in the House budget, and they're hoping to get that budget to the floor, I believe, by this afternoon, actually. Currently, as of 9:08 today, the governor had put in a $50 increase to the base student allocation, and that is still there. There is rumor, and that's unfortunately how it works in Juneau, a lot of rumor, that could be removed from the budget here either later this morning or this afternoon, and that it would be what we consider flat funding. The same BSA level that we had for this year would be moving forward. So we're going to be keeping an eye on that and trying to weigh in. But that is what we've budgeted for in our actual budget document, is flat funding. We've heard all kinds of other rumors, such as all the way up to a 10% cut at some point, which a 10% cut for us would be over $12 million. Mm-hmm. And we've already, in our current budget, we've reduced it by $4.5 million. So to try to find another $12 million when 80 to 85% of our budget is personnel-based, it's going to have a serious impact to teachers and support staff and what support we can provide from a district level, because it would be across-the-board cuts. We're working real hard to make sure that's not going to happen. I haven't heard that 10% cut for a while, but I do anticipate there's going to be more discussion, because education is the second biggest expenditure by our state, following the permanent fund dividends, and closely following. So there's been a lot of discussion, and so we've got a series of plans, contingency plans. You know, if the $50 increase stays in, we know exactly what we're going to do there, which is go back in and take care of some of the cuts that we made in the classroom with the PTR. If we experience any further cuts, we've got some plans, but if we get the absolute worst case cut, we're going to have to get together as communities and really see what we can do. But I anticipate it will be flat funding, at least with a lot of work and trying to get that $50 increase.
All right, and I'm going to go back to you, and we'll talk more about what the flat funding would mean for, well, what all the options would mean in real terms in the classrooms. But I want to go over to our principals here who are in the studio with us right now. And Kari, I'm starting with you again. What impact have you seen to your school, to Homer Middle School? Have you seen any impact as far as budget cuts or budget worries?
We've actually been really fortunate at Homer Middle School. Our enrollment has been increasing, so we are kind of remaining status quo right now, so we are still able to provide all of our regular programs. In addition, we're doing music for all of our students. We have an enrichment, basically an elective wheel, so all of our students are taking a robotics, technology, health, and art class. So we're able to maintain where we are right now. I think the biggest concern is making sure that our class sizes remain at a manageable level for our teachers.
I see. So you're staying status quo right now. And I apologize. I called you Kari. It's Carrie, right?
That's correct. Thank you.
Sorry about that. But next, I'm wondering, what about the climate of your school? Are students, teachers, are they worried about what might happen in the future?
I think for the immediate future that there's not a concern at this point. Basically, we're just saying we need to see what's going to happen with the budget cuts. We've had a lot of support from the district early on to say if for some reason you would have a 0.5 cut or a 1.0 cut, what would you do? We also have provided that information to our site council, and our site council has asked us if we had cuts, where would those cuts be seen? And so just that forward thinking has been a really good thing for us. So at this time, I don't think there's a concern, but we definitely continue to have the open communications.
Mm-hmm. And where would those cuts go to if you did see some cuts to your budget?
I actually don't feel comfortable having that conversation on the radio right now, because it would be an individual that we would want to make sure that we spoke to that person face to face before we would do that. But at this time, we're not experiencing any cuts. So, but it would not be in the classroom.
I see. All right. How about you, Conrad? What are you seeing at your school over in Chapman?
Sure. So in October, when we send our projected enrollments to the district office for them to submit to the state, we actually had a projected enrollment of an increase of nine students at the time. So at the time we had 112 students, we were projecting for 121. And so in our line of work, when enrollment goes up, good things happen. When enrollment goes down, the opposite is true. And so we're pretty excited about that increase in enrollment. We have a pre-K program at Chapman, and that helps act as kind of a feeder for us. So we kind of know who's coming in, so we can get a handle of what our projections are going to look like. And then, you know, having an eighth grade that goes on to high school, we know how many kids we're losing. So we're able to get a pretty good handle of what that's going to look like from year to year.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, you said you had a little bit of a bump in enrollment. Does that mean that did that help as far as maintaining your budget, or did it did it hurt at all?
Sure. So, you know, with our budget realities right now, you know, where we would have had maybe in the past an increase in enrollment, you might have seen a 0.5 increase. Now that we're faced with what we're faced with, that increase in enrollment just means status quo. So we're lucky enough to be able to maintain that. The unfortunate part about it is that we haven't issued non-tenure contracts yet because we don't know what's going to happen. And so that's kind of where we're at right now is waiting to see what's going to happen to them. The danger with not knowing is that, you know, we run the risk of possibly losing good people who are, you know, getting ready for job fairs and that sort of thing. So,
mm-hmm. And when you say you are, you know, not able to renew your non-tenured contracts right now, you're talking about teachers. You're not able to guarantee that your teachers right now have a job next year.
That's correct. So our tenured contracts already went to the board and were approved, and non-tenured are waiting, kind of in a holding pattern to wait and see what's going to happen to them.
Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing in a ideal world, usually you would like to, by this time, be able to say for certain to your non-tenured teachers, we're going to renew your contract?
Yeah, I believe those normally go to the board by April.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, Tim, I'm going to move over to you now. What about your school? You know, we know your schools. We know that Catrimaxilo and Razdolna are your two schools, but Catrimaxilo especially is in need of a new building. Understand that. But any changes or any concerns coming up with the state budget right now?
Well, with the state budget, we are losing one teaching position down in Silo due to a loss of students. We're down to 48. Students right now. So with the new pupil teacher ratio that came out from the board at 18.5, that means we lose one teaching staff. So we're down to three in Silo. Razdolna, on the other hand, the population is increasing or staying fairly much the same. So we're in pretty good shape there. But along with Conrad, it's really hard when you have great teaching staff and you can't offer them a contract early on and they look elsewhere, and pretty soon you just don't have the best situation in the schools.
Mm-hmm. So you run the risk, I guess you would say, of your teachers going off and finding other jobs, and you being left with an open position that you need to fill if you can't offer an early guarantee of a contract.
Exactly, and at Silo, Catchmaxilo especially, it's harder as teachers have to walk down the switchbacks and hike into school every day. You have to find someone who's willing to do that, and that's not always the easiest to do. And then like today with the high tides, you got to wait an extra hour or two to get out of to leave school or get in just due to the tides. So it's a little more difficult.
Mm-hmm. Sean, wondering if you can weigh in here on the situation that the schools face as far as making sure that they get their non-tenured teachers' contracts renewed as soon as possible. Last time we spoke, you said that the school district was mostly able to get that done fairly early because you were relying on your savings, right?
We're kind of in a situation with the state funding that we've had to hold off this year on our typical plan of moving forward with non-tenure contracts. In the past, we've been able to do things early because there was a three-year funding plan. Of course, now this year with a $3.5 to $4 billion budget deficit in Juneau, we don't know what's going to happen. Our savings has been, we've been using our fund balance over the years, as you mentioned, that's our savings. And last year we chose to move forward with our non-tenured contracts in April, even though there was a last-minute adjustment by the Senate with a deeper cut than we anticipated, because we felt we had enough in savings to offer stability and to move forward. And what we're really looking for this year, and this is what basically will help us in determining if we can bring our non-tenured contracts again in April, is exactly what the House and the Senate is going to do with the budget. And we're really pushing on the legislature to make the funding decisions early, which they've shown that they want to do. And it's going to be really key to keep an eye on what they're doing, because the Senate has said they want to get their budget to the floor by March 15th and get any differences ironed out with the House within a week after that. So if we can keep that going on and moving forward at the way they're talking, we're hoping to be able to move forward with our non-tenured contracts, or as many as we can, in April. Unfortunately, I'll believe it when I see it with the legislature moving through that quickly. Typically, education funding is something that doesn't happen until the very end of the session, which is April 17th. And with just the possibility of cuts, committing to a large number of contracts too early could have a serious impact next fall that would be detrimental to our students, in that we may, have to cut back in the fall, which would be worst-case scenario for us and worst-case for our students. And I recognize that we want to provide stability, but we also have to be responsible so that we don't overall hurt kids. And I do know that our non-tenured folks they're asking questions. They're hanging in there with us. And I think, for the most part, the vast majority of them want to be here and are also keeping an eye on the legislature and seeing where we're going to go. But as soon as we get the information that we feel we need from the legislative process, we will clearly communicate that to all of our non-tenured.
And you said that one thing that kind of holds true is usually education funding is determined later on in the process. And I know you're not a legislator, but I'm wondering, do you know why that happens?
Well, I think it's because it's the biggest piece of the pie outside of the permanent fund. And, it's one of those things that tends to get a little bit political in the end. And it's just a part of the process, and that's why we have always, as a public education system, has requested forward funding, so that we know what's going on, especially with the non-tenured piece, because we're not the only ones, the only district that's kind of waiting on the non-tenured. I mean, we've got Anchorage and Fairbanks, and all of the large districts are waiting because they have to. And the principals are correct. I mean, the longer we wait, the more people are going to look outside. And Anchorage this year had some unfilled positions, and so did Fairbanks. We were fortunate that we were able to fill our positions before the school year. But that's going to get tighter and tighter the longer, the state does not forward fund education.
All right. I'm going to stay with you for a minute, Sean, but first I want to throw out our phone numbers here. Anyone who would like to call in and ask a question can call us locally, 907-235-7721, or you can call toll-free 1-800-979-5224. This is the Coffee Table, and today we're talking about the financial health of the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District and also future plans for the district moving forward. So, Sean, most of the principals here, all the principals here basically said that they are looking at status quo, maybe a few changes here and there. Is that kind of holding true for the rest of the district right now with the information that you have for now?
Well, based on our current budget, we would be reducing overall staff for teachers by about 25. Now, half of that is due to the declining enrollment, and I know that Tim alluded to that a little bit in KCLO. And really what we did, and the reason why that reduction is being made, is because we absorbed that decline in enrollment this year. So we missed the mark a little bit, and some schools were able to keep staff just because of their schedules and such, but we're making that adjustment next year. So about half of that reduction in teaching staff is due to catch up on declining enrollment. The other half is due to the PTR adjustments. Now, we did make a little bit bigger jump at the high school level with our PTR, pupil-teacher ratio adjustment. And so at the high school level, it is going to be a little bit tighter, especially when most of our high schools have a declining enrollment issue. And so, they're kind of getting it twice. Whereas the middle schools and the elementary schools, that's not necessarily the case. We did not adjust their PTR as much. And we also, they're not experiencing necessarily that declining enrollment. They've been pretty steady. So I can foresee that there's going to have to be some difficult decisions made at the high school levels. That is being handled in a variety of different ways. I've seen our schools working together more, doing some more distance education with video conferencing and blended learning across the district. And so we're able to absorb some of that, but it's getting tight, particularly at the high school level.
What have you heard from legislators? Representing the Kenai Peninsula. What have you heard from them as far as their plans on voting for education funding? Have you heard anything from them at all on that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, our delegation is very, very supportive of education. I mean, they know that it's an investment, not only in the current economy on the peninsula, but it's also an investment for the future. There's no doubt about that. They're very interested in I know that there's sometimes different reports on the whole gas line project and all that come out, but they're still optimistic that that is going to happen in the future, and they want our kids to be ready for that, and they want our kids to come back and live here if they do move, or stay here after they graduate from high school. So they recognize the importance of the investment. That's why I believe, particularly in the House, if there are any kind of a cut, it's not going to be nearly as deep, simply because I believe that between Representative Seaton and Chenault, they're working real hard for us. Senator Machicki and Senator Stevens, they're doing a great job as well. They're just a little bit, there's a little bit more conservative group that's kind of driving that boat right now. But I know that Senator Stevens and Senator Machicki are working very, very hard to make sure that the cuts, if any, are minimal to education. So I'm really pleased with the effort of our delegation, and they recognize the importance, and they also recognize that one of the reasons why our district does well is that there's a solid investment there, and they want to continue that.
Thank you very much, Sean. I'm going to come back to our principals here in the studio, and we're going to leave the budget situation for a moment, and I want to talk about some of the issues facing your schools and some of the things that you would like to see in your schools or things you're working on in your schools right now. And I want to start with you, Carrie. Anything special going on at Homer Middle School, or anything that you're hoping to change at Homer Middle School anytime soon?
Well, before I talking about changes, I just think I've been very fortunate. This is my third year at Homer Middle School, and the students, the parents, the community have just been awesome. That's all I could. I think that's what I said with my very beginning interview with the newspapers. They are just awesome, awesome, awesome kids. As we're moving forward, just coming in and supporting, just like last night we had our community band concert, and we've really grown our music program. As I've said before, all of our students are taking band or choir, and just the parental support for their students is great. And we're just kind of working together, and I think people know that we kind of have an open door policy, so if you have any concerns, definitely come in and share with us. And we're just kind of making adjustments as we have new kids coming in and having students transition out to the high school. So I'm going to put a little plug out there, if I can. We have about 60 students who are going to be going out for track, so if there's anybody out there listening who'd be interested in helping with our track program, that would be one immediate obstacle that I'm looking for. I've got two people, but I'm just looking for a third one. But in all of my years of education, I would say that staff at Homer Middle School is probably the best staff that I've ever had the opportunity to work for, too. So those are some things that I'd like to share. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you, Carrie. And wondering, how many students do you have over at Homer Middle School?
187.
187. Got you. And I don't remember if you said before, did your enrollment grow or decline last year?
We are projected for 191 for the beginning of the 2016-17 school year. And we fluctuate by a couple kids right after Christmas time. Mm-hmm. So we're about the same.
Mm-hmm. I see. All right, Conrad, how about you? Have there been any big changes over at Chapman, or is there anything that you think is just important to say, you know, important for the public and the stakeholders in your school to know about?
Sure. So, you know, I'm fortunate to work with incredible individuals, and we're the only school in a one-school town, so we are the hub in a lot of ways, and we accept that responsibility, It puts us in a position to really connect with kids and the parents in our community. So fortunate in that way. Some of our challenges, we do have an older building, and so nothing really significant has been done in terms of additions or improvements to that building in quite some time. But we are slated to get a new gym roof this summer, and we've done some work on the inside to try to make it look, more pleasing when you walk in. We got new benches and new paint last year. So it really looks like a different building when you walk into it. So our focus in the future is going to be, siding and windows, I think, is going to be the next step. So I'm hoping that that'll happen.
Siding and windows on the gym or for the whole building?
On the entire building. So we are on the capital improvement project list and have been there for some time. So as soon as there's funding available for that, I believe we will that'll happen in the future. So a couple of things that we've done to, we're a pre-K through 8th grade school, and I mentioned that we had a pre-K available. I'm going to put it in a plug right now. We have our dial screening for our pre-K scheduled for April 28th. So if there's any parents that live in our boundary area that have a four-year-old or going to be four by September 1st, they need to come and see us. We're happy to share about our pre-K program. I think it's that really helps us do very, very well.
DIO, I'm not familiar with that. Is that an
acronym? It's an assessment that we use for incoming pre-K students. So we'll run students through the assessment. There's a team that comes through and does that assessment, and we can get kids on a list. So if we have enough kids, we can have two sessions of pre-K. We can have an AM and a PM. And those typically run 10 in the morning, 10 in the afternoon. For the last couple years, we've run one pre-K program in the morning and did some reading interventions for our early readers in the afternoon. So, but like I said, if we have enough kids, we can have two sessions. So that's why I put that plug out there. Happy to talk to any of our parents that have students that could qualify before by September 1st and share about our building. The other thing that we've done is we've really tried to boost our middle school programming. We're the only middle school shop program on the Southern Peninsula. We run all our middle schoolers through our shop program. We offer music for every one of our band for 5th through 8th grade, every one of our 5th through 8th graders. And we have a full music program for all our kindergarten through 4th grade. And then we have a full elective schedule for our middle school students. So,
thank you. Thank you for the rundown. And I want to go back to the pre-K discussion we were having earlier. Pre-K funding was one of the things that was slated for cuts in the House subcommittees that were proposing changes to the budget to the House Finance Committee. And I'm just curious, how important is pre-K to your community out there in Anchor Point?
Sure. So our pre-K is vital to our success that our students have in kindergarten. And so when we can bring kids that already have their letter sound awareness, their that already coming in with some school skills, we don't have to reteach those in kindergarten because they've already received those. So it really helps us make sure that they have a good foundation coming in. And it also, you can kind of see the line in our population because we've had pre-K for the last, I believe, five, six years. And you can see we have more numbers when we've had the pre-K than before we've had that pre-K. So it's really acted as our own feeder school. We've been able to get a handle of how many kids we're going to have coming in and keep those kids longer. So.
All right. Thank you very much, Conrad. I appreciate it. We're going to take a quick break. It is almost 9:35, and you're listening to KBBI AM 890 Homer. This is the Coffee Table. We have three principals from the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District here in the studio with us today, and we also have the superintendent, Sean Dusick. We're going to be right back in just a moment. Stay tuned. Thank you. All right, we are back here on the coffee table. This is KBBI AM 890 Homer, and we are speaking with three principals from the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, as well as the superintendent of the district today. Actually, we have a fourth principal on the phone right now. On line one, we have Pete Swanson, and I was hoping I could get him to talk about McNeil Canyon Elementary. Pete, how are you doing? Are you there, Pete? Let's see. How about now? Pete, can you hear me?
Yeah, I heard you earlier, but yeah, I'm doing very well. Thanks, Quentin.
Great. We just had a little bit of an issue getting you connected, but we are good to go now. So, Pete, why don't you tell me a little bit about what's going on over at McNeil? How are you guys doing considering, you know, the climate that the entire state is in looking at its budget?
Well, McNeil Canyon has been through this rodeo before, and my teachers have, you know, they're paying attention to what they're supposed to be doing, which is teaching. Certainly it weighs on all of us to think forward and say, well, how are we going to do what we're doing now with less teachers and more, you know, less resources and all those kinds of things that come with a reduced budget.
Pete, I'm wondering, are you next to a radio by any chance? And if you are, could you turn that down?
Just in my office alone with no radio.
Okay, perfect. I'm just wondering because we're getting a little bit of feedback over the line, but we can deal with it. So please continue. Sorry that I interrupted you.
No problem. So, we're, you know, it's obviously going to be a challenge for us, and we, as we get closer to the end of the school year, we'll spend more time looking at how we're going to we're going to be down a teacher position. Fortunately, this year, as opposed to last year, we don't have to let somebody, you know, move somebody. We're actually saying goodbye to Debbie Piper, who's been here for 32 years teaching, and she's retiring, which is, we hate to lose her, but it's nice not to have to move somebody. And that'll be three teachers in 2 years that we've lost out here as far as positions. So it'll be definitely a challenge. But the nice thing about this school and the community is that people pull together and fill in the gaps where they can. So looking forward to what kind of solution we come up with.
So, Pete, you mentioned that you have lost a couple of other teachers in the past. I'm wondering if that was just, you know, the same thing as you're seeing with this teacher this year. Was it retirement? Did you lose them because of budget issues? Was it,
last year was a combination of a decline in our enrollment numbers and a, you know, obviously there was an increase in our PTR because we joined a different group in the staffing ratio. We went from a 17 to 1 ratio to a 19.5 to 1 ratio. We joined some other of the small elementaries in the school district for that. So that had an impact on us, and those teachers were not retirements. Those were people that had to be placed in open positions in town.
Mm-hmm. All right, I see. Anything else that is impacted over at your school by, you know, tightening the purse strings, I guess you would say? Changes that are happening around the school?
Well, currently, I would say, you know, we've adjusted this year. We have a couple of combination classes, combination grade levels, because when you're teaching seven grade levels with six teachers, you have to do something like that. Next year, it'll be the same thing. We'll have to combo a little bit more. So that's always a little bit more challenging. We don't have a real handle on the decrease of resources in terms of like supply budget. That's going to have an impact on what we can provide, just in terms of paper and pencils. You know, obviously, technology continues to cost money, and as we look down the line, some of those technologies don't last as long as we'd like them to, and so you got to replace that stuff, or you hope to replace it. That I don't think we have a clear picture of how that's going to roll out either, in terms of do we extend another year of hoping that a laptop lasts, you know, 5 years instead of four? Or, those are always things that you don't really know until you get there.
All right. Anything else that you think is important to mention, Pete, before I let you go? I'm going to want to thank you for calling in.
Yeah. Well, I think it's going to take all of us working together. I don't see it being one person. Mr. Dusick's not going to be able to solve it all on his own. It's going to be all of us pulling together. You know, whatever our role is, whether we're a parent or a community member that's had children go through this system, or parents that currently have kids that are just getting rolling in the system. I have, my last is moving out as a senior this year from Homer High, and some sense I'm kind of happy that she doesn't have to endure what's going to happen for the next few years in terms of the way it's going to impact classrooms and resources that she's had available to her. But I'm going to be here, and my wife's going to continue to be here as far as working, and so I see it as a community issue, and beyond just the McNeil community, I think it's got to be a state community that pulls together to solve this.
Thank you very much, Pete. I appreciate you calling in.
You bet. Thanks, Quentin.
All right. Dan, we actually have another caller on line two that I want to get to before we continue with our discussion. Jill is on line two.
Hi.
Hey, Jill.
I just called to say thank you. We just moved to Homer about 5 months ago from Los Angeles, where I worked with the 83 school districts during the recession, and it was just horrifying. And I'm the writing's on the wall, and I know what you guys are going to have to grapple with, and I really trust you to make decisions. And I especially want to thank Principal Dendron at the middle school. I worked with a lot of principals, and she is such a superstar, and what she's doing for that school is just amazing. And my son is attending, and I am really thrilled that he's going to have an opportunity to be, you know, guided by her over the next couple of years in this crisis. So thank you all so much for hanging in there and doing what you can for our kids.
Thank you very much for calling in, Jill.
And you got it.
That's nice. Some, I'm guessing, welcome praise for you there, Carrie.
Thank you, Jill, so much for making those comments. And your family has definitely been a great addition to the Homer area.
So next, we didn't get to talk to you, Tim, about what is happening with Kachemak, Silo, and Razdolna. Wondering if you can give the community a little bit of an update on issues you're facing.
Well, at Kachemak, Silo, and Razdolna, they're both kindergarten through 12th grade schools, and all of our students come to school in kindergarten speaking Russian. So one of our issues and one of the things that we're working with right now is how do we elevate the Russian language along with English, and we're working through the dual language program right now and just trying that. And what the dual language program does is teaches content in both Russian and in English. It's not an immersion program. So you have the science unit being taught in Russian and a different science unit being taught in English by the teachers. And then you have a bridging activity where you come together and you compare the two languages. Hey, well, what's this? You know, how does this concept fit in Russian? How does this fit in English? So it's pretty exciting down in the villages to be actually working with the Russian. I know absolutely no Russian, so I'm not much help in that. But the other thing that we're working at both schools is getting all the kids being able to swim. All of our kids are out on the water all the time in the summer fishing, and a lot of them don't know how to swim. So last week, Razdolna spent the week at the Bay Club, and I thank the Bay Club and Kelly Blue for putting that together. and they were on the rock climbing wall, and then they spent the time learning how to swim. And we only did at Rasdolna, we did kindergarten through fifth grade, and on Friday they spent the day finding out how to get in and out of a boat. So they brought in a raft, and kids fell out and then had to be pulled in or throw a buoy to them. And then next week, Catch Maxilo, the whole K-12 will be going into Homer High School, and Bridget will be teaching them how to swim. So it's really important, I think, for our kids to learn how to swim, and that's what we're working on. And then another big issue at CELO is always the new school. The facilities we have right now are in pretty decrepit shape. So, you know, David Kalugin down in CELO has been down with the legislators and the governor working real hard the last couple of years to get funding from the state for a new school. But in this current financial situation the state's in, it's hard to come up with that money. But at this point, the governor does have $10 million set aside for a new school at K-CELO. So that's about where we're at.
I see. I'm wondering, I haven't really heard much about how the students handle the the conditions at that school building, K-CELO. How do they how does that affect them?
You know, kids are real resilient. I mean, this is the only school they know. So when you put the chair one end of the room and it rolls to the other end of the room, they enjoy it. So that might be an issue later on when you have a level floor. But, you know, kids make do. And it's a lot harder on the teachers when you don't have the space to put up student work or move around to a place where, you know, some of your kids need a little quiet time to work and some need a little bit more activity. So,
gotcha. And, you know, as this budget situation develops, we won't know until the end, I guess you would say, whether or not you're going to get that new building. It's kind of just like very, I guess, bad timing to have this need that has to, really needs to happen as soon as possible.
Well, that's very true. It would have been nice if we'd done it 20 years ago when the state was handing out a lot more money. Because when the school was in the budget and approved in the state budget, we were at a 70-30 split where the state paid 70% and the borough paid 30. Now it's changed to a 60-40, so the state will pay 60% and the borough has to come up with 40%. But the way I understand it, the CELO school is a grant funded school, so that $10 million is, this is my first year coming in on this program, so I'm not really sure what that means, but it sounds a little more stable that it might actually happen.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, we're going to keep our eye on it, and best of luck to you on that. I'm going to go over to our phone line again. We have another caller on line one. I believe this is Flo. I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing your name wrong.
No, that's right.
Got you. Great. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having the program. When we moved to Alaska in 1969, it was just the beginning of the oil, and we lived at the upper end of the peninsula, and schools were busting at the seams. And one of the things that that impressed me at the time is that every paycheck of every person in this state, whether you were inside or an outsider, you paid $10 into a school fund. It was called a school tax. And so the schools were forward funded. And then when the oil started to flow, they took that school tax away, which was a really huge mistake. And I don't know why it's never been reinstated, because if we were to prorate that for today, it would be substantially more than $10 per paycheck. But this way, everybody, whether you're a fisherman or an oil person or a tourist or whoever, gets a paycheck, including teachers and administrators, we all pay for school, as we all should, because education is something that the whole state benefits from, as well as the whole country and world. I mean, it's our responsibility to educate our children. So it seems to me a school tax right up front would prevent all this, you know, nail-biting and hair-pulling by people in education wondering if they're going to have money to fund the teachers and the students' needs for the following year. It just seems a no-brainer. So I'll take any comments off the air and hope that the superintendent hears that when he has the hearing, that that is part of the conversation, because I know that some of those legislators were here at the time that the school tax was in place, and it worked. So thanks for your time and my time on the phone.
Thank you for calling in, Flo.
Mm-hmm.
And, Sean, you know, have you... Do you remember
like
that?
To make a call, please hang up and try again.
We need to drop that call. There we go. And Sean, do you remember that school tax that Flo was talking about, or have you heard anyone mention that school tax to you before?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, I mean, I didn't live here at that time. My wife's family was here, though, during that time. And that has been a part of the conversation. As a matter of fact, the governor with the Sustainable Futures conversation that he started this fall, that is a part of that conversation. The shift has been, though, more toward the earnings reserve from the permanent fund as a way to fill the gap at this point. I think, though, that all revenue options are still on the table. Certainly, I've brought that up all the time. You know, that we need a long-term revenue plan so that we can stabilize the economy here in the state. And the legislators have to make that decision. The governor is taking the lead on various options in his proposals. I do believe that he's proposed a state income tax as well, and I know that Representative Seaton had put that on the table last spring. But I don't think that there's any option off the table at this point. One of the things that I've heard from the legislature is that they wanted to deal with cuts early on and set the budget, and then the second half of the session would be focused on revenues. So that conversation on revenues to pay for the existing budget is going to be coming up over the next, you know, probably within the next 2 or 3 weeks. But that certainly is on the table, and I really appreciate Flo calling in and with that reminder, and certainly we'll keep that. We'll keep that on the front burner.
Interesting. So are you saying that you are going to be asking the legislature or suggesting to the legislators that a school tax might be the best option moving or a good option moving forward? Or, you know, I don't know, does some strategy play in here, or maybe you're going to hold off on asking for that?
Right now what I'm asking for is that a long-term plan is developed.
Mm-hmm.
And that what the governor has proposed is a great starting point for conversation, but I don't believe that any revenue options right now at the legislative level are off the table. And so if that ends up being what the legislators deem as one of the better options, I would support that simply because I support a long-term revenue plan that removes the price of oil, tying a student's funding for education to the price of oil. We need to get that disconnected, because price of oil, as you know, is volatile. But every 4 or 5 years, we go through this, and that can't happen anymore.
All right, we are running out of time here. We only have about 3 minutes left. But first, I want to just ask you, Sean, really quickly: is there anything else that you think is important to say about the school district's situation right now?
Yeah, I think. I'm actually optimistic about the school district's future. I think we've got a tremendous staff. I think we have a real opportunity to show the value that we have across this state with many legislators, and many of them are starting to realize the value that we provide. And so there is, even though there's a crisis, there's always opportunity, and I think that we have a great opportunity to show exactly what we're capable of in public education.
Thank you very much for that, Sean, and thank you for joining us today. And I also want to thank our principals for coming in and joining us as well. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So
this is The Coffee Table, and we are down to the wire here, so we're going to say goodbye. Thanks for joining us. This is KBBI AM 890 Homer, and Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is going to be up next.